Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Oh, it's my turn to talk on the radio. Good morning. It's John. It's 9:12. This is WGN Radio, and I'm here weekdays from 9 to noon. I must tell you, I drove from New Buffalo, Michigan to Chicago yesterday. Obviously, we went there first and then came back on Friday and then back again on Sunday. As we drove up Lakeshore Drive on Sunday, I got a pretty good view of the damage that those storms did over the weekend. And there are places along the bike path and walkway between Lakeshore Drive and the lake, obviously, that are completely unbuckled, where it looks like something just came underneath the paved path and picked it up and just pushed it away. In some places, the damage is negligible or not existent at all. And in other places, it looks like something just exploded.
They're like sinkholes formed.
Yeah, right. And then just came in and ripped them up. Mary, there are places where the pavement is lifted and pushed onto the pavement in other places. Think about the force that that would require.
We
do on Monday. On Mondays, the Mega Pros Monday morning quiz. And I decided to make the quiz about the Great Lakes in Lake Michigan, because that's a small sea sitting right there. In fact, how about this, Dave? Mary, see if you know the answer to this question. Lake Michigan is not the largest lake in the world. In fact, it's not the largest of the Great Lakes. Is it the second, third, or fourth largest of the Great Lakes?
I believe it's the second.
Mary, you care to chime in on that one?
I'll go with the third.
Well,
I know it's not the first.
Superior is. And,
yes.
You know, then you get into an argument about, are you talking about surface area or volume of water? As surface areas go, it's number three. The largest lake in the world is known as the sea. What lake is that?
It's known as the sea.
Is it the Black Sea, the Red Sea, or the Caspian Sea? The correct answer is the Caspian Sea.
The Caspian Sea.
The Caspian Sea would be
too
that.
Late. You did not buzz in on time. Name, you get 15 seconds. Name the five Great Lakes. Ready, set, go.
Superior, Michigan, Erie, Ontario, and
Huron. Huron, yeah.
Huron.
Well, the group has answered it in 15 seconds. Steve Grzanich with a big save in the newsroom, and he saves!
Isn't it mainly the streets that intersect
really?
Michigan Avenue and then the streets
that
intersect?
Think of the streets, yeah. Adams, Washington, Huron, all of
them.
There's
no Lake Ohio.
That's true. Okay, it's 9:14. So just a note about that. In fact, they're having some speakers come to Chicago to talk about water and the environment. We'll talk more about that later in the week, but it's one of the great resources in the world, and Chicago is sitting on one of the largest freshwater bodies in the world. And boy, you saw the power of that thing this weekend, didn't you? The waves were roaring on Lake Michigan, too. It was something to see. By the way, Dave, I don't know if you know about this guy, but there's a running back who I saw on television, and I think the Bears should really look into this guy. His name is Derrick Henry, and he's a running back for the Ravens. For the Titans.
Yes.
See, I don't watch the NFL that carefully. I just, like, when the Bears run, I watch the Bears. And then I watch the Packers and the Vikings. I watch the teams in our division.
Well, I haven't heard of this guy. Tell me about him, John.
He's 6'12", 300 pounds.
No, he's not.
He's 6'4". He weighs about 220.
Yeah, a little bigger.
Really
fast. A little bigger than that.
Yeah, he looks bigger than that. And with a helmet, he's probably around 700 pounds. It's like a mid-sized sedan just coming at you.
Yep.
Unbelievable. Holy cow. They give the ball to him every time. And every time he gets about 40 yards. We should get him. The other guy we should get, I don't know if you've heard of this name, Patrick Mahomes.
I haven't heard about him. Where does he play?
He's got a red helmet on. That's all I know. And he is really good. He can run. He can throw. He can jump. He dunked during the game. He did everything. Wow.
And he's like, I don't care. You guys are up 24-0 on us, and we're not doing it. And my receivers can't catch passes.
Yeah.
We're going to come back and get you.
Isn't that the strangest thing you've ever seen?
Travis Kelce could not hang on to the ball.
Throw it to
and
him.
Then he didn't drop anything the rest of the day.
Hit him in the numbers, hit him in the numbers, hit him in the numbers.
And it's consistent.
And then he started to catch him.
Well, you know the thing about Mahomes? When those guys were dropping balls on him early, he never got frustrated.
Yeah.
He never was like trying to show up his receivers and like, come on, throwing his arms up in disgust or any of that stuff.
Here's what that game felt like to me. You know how when your team is up, but you know the other team is maybe better than you, and so even if your basketball team is up 14 points with 6 minutes left, you go, they're going to make a run. They're going to make a run. And you knew they were going to make a run, but you didn't know it was going to be a 40-point run, that they'd score, what, 7 touchdowns in a row.
I mean, did you watch the Purdue-Michigan State game yesterday? Purdue was blowing them out, and you keep waiting. Because I did that game, because Michigan State at Northwestern a few years ago in Rosemont. I think Northwestern led by 27. You just knew Michigan State was going to make a run. In this case, you knew Michigan State was going to make a run, and they did. They cut it to like 12 points. That's as close as they could get. This game was totally different because you knew how much firepower Kansas City has, and they couldn't continue. They couldn't possibly continue to play as poorly as they were to start the game. I mean, having a punt blocked and fumbling the ball and a kickoff return, and just, I mean, everything they did was going wrong.
Something about the psychology of groupthink, about teams, right? Mm-hmm. If we're doing well, we all do well. It's like batters in a lineup. Once everybody starts to hit, everybody starts to hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to see the momentum switch, and when it switched, then all of a sudden the momentum completely went that way. And you think these are the same guys in the first half that were playing in the second half. Why does it go that way? But there's something about the psychology of it almost seems like.
Well, it helps to be playing at home, too.
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't help him playing at home for the first quarter. I mean, that was unbelievable. Well, that was the NFL over the weekend. And again, I don't know if the Bears are listening, but this is two names I want you to write down. What was the first guy, the real
Derrick
tall guy?
Henry, is
Derrick
that the
Henry.
Guy you want?
He is the NFL's leading rusher. That was in the newspaper today. Has this been published widely? Do people know about him?
Do know that he's the only player in NFL history with two games in the postseason with 175 yards or more.
Yeah.
And he's done it like in three straight. He had 180 in his last game of the regular season.
We should really look into that. And then there's this other guy with a red helmet who I like his chances.
Mahomes.
And boy, can he run, jump, throw? He dunked at one point in the game just because he could.
I don't know if you know this, John, because you say you always watch the Bears. He played against the Bears not even a month ago.
Is that where he counted 10 fingers for everybody or whatever it was? Didn't he do something with his hands when he was coming in or out of the game, and he wanted everybody to know where he was picked in the draft? Something like that.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Mary Schmeek has a column in the Tribune today. Was this in yesterday, Alec? Was about a guy yesterday who got into his Uber. He was heading out to the airport, and he could smell that the car reeked of marijuana. He didn't say anything to the driver, though. Maybe it was a previous passenger. Maybe it was the driver. He takes his flight, and then when he comes back into town, he gets into another ride share, and son of a gun, if this guy doesn't smell of marijuana as well. And he said, I don't know if I should say something. Maybe it was the previous passenger. What am I supposed to do? Schmeek writes that there's just a lot of new questions about how we interact with people as they use marijuana. A friend of mine has a friend who went to get a massage recently. They went to Massage Envy, which I guess is a place where you go to get massages. And the people
it's a big chain, John.
I'm not into massages either. And actually, I am, but I just am uncomfortable with my clothes off anyway. So they go to get the massage, and the person goes, "You smell of marijuana," and would not rub down the person who they thought was. You know, it seemed to me like you don't want your masseuse to be high, but what does the masseuse care if you are? That might just be that much more pleasurable for you. But they suspected that the person was using marijuana. I don't know if the individual confirmed that they had or not. They had. But, I mean, what business is it of yours? And they refused to rub them down. Explain that company policy to me. In the case of the Uber driver, though, the passenger never said anything to either of the drivers and then posted on Facebook, "I'm all for marijuana legalization, but this has me asking questions. I didn't report either driver because they both seemed like nice guys and ultimately functioned perfectly well." So what to do moving forward? What would you do? Pretty much everybody said you should report them to the rideshare companies they work for. Richard Miller, Mary Schmeek writes, a professor of pharmacology at Northwestern, was asked, does smoking weed affect driving? Absolutely, he said it does. It definitely affects motor function. He was careful to note that different bodies react to cannabis differently, and that a dose that impairs one person might not impair another. Not everybody who drinks alcohol and drives a car has a crash, right? But you increase the likelihood that you'll have one, right? Yeah, but here again, I can have a beer and legally drive a car. Not at the same time, but you get the point. Even if you smelled a little beer on my breath, if you smell a little weed in my sweater or in my hair, that doesn't mean that I can't drive safely. So what are you supposed to do? Driving under the influence, Schmeek writes, of marijuana remains illegal in all 50 states under the influence, including those that have legalized it for recreational use, but determining how high is too high to safely drive remains an elusive measure. Yeah, no kidding. So then what do you do?
Yeah. I wonder if the massage policy has anything to do with, okay, you're inebriated, you're impaired, and you might misbehave during the massage that I'm giving you. You know, with sexual assault or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, Steve. Maybe that's the thinking.
But I think someone who is likely to do that, not under the influence, is only going to do it under the influence.
Well, yeah, I do think that it sort of liberates people's sometimes worst parts of their personality. But are you suggesting, Steve, that they'll falsely accuse you or that they'll get frisky or something like that?
They may get frisky. Yeah,
right. And then you're like, no, I don't want any of this. Right. I don't want any of this, Jack.
I'm reading on a website here called Motive Running. They have all this advice about do's and don'ts for getting a massage, and it says, can I smoke weed or drink alcohol before a session? Yes, you might feel the effects of the drugs faster, though, as the massage will increase blood flow. So don't overindulge.
Bill, you're on WGN Radio. Bill, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, I was a masseur for 50 years, and I ran into all kinds of, of course, then it wasn't marijuana, but inebriated people. And just one of the things you just got to contend with, unless you really... maybe it's your own business, but if you work for an establishment, you have to go with the rules they say. If they say go ahead and give the massage or the treatment, you have to do it. You just have to just contend with it. And I had a guy make a grab at me once, and I told him right then, I said, try it one more time. I said, you're going to miss your arm.
Well, that's nothing you want to ever hear from your masseur.
And then another thing. It'd be the same if you, in other words, so the person smelled like they had been using marijuana.
Yeah.
Well, I meant it'd be the same if you went to the barber and you sit in the barber chair and the barber said, man, you need a shower. I'm not cutting your hair. You follow me?
Let's see. If the barber doesn't want to cut because of the way you smell, I guess that's the barber's prerogative.
I think I would grant him that.
Yeah, but as a company policy, I mean, I hadn't thought. I think the point of Mary Schmeek's column, she didn't write about the masseuse. She wrote about the Uber drivers, the Lyft drivers. But I guess it's just something that we're all going to have to get used to interacting with now. Bill, thanks for the phone call. By the way, a couple of texts came in. If you want to remember the Great Lakes, remember, since the lake was so active, 20-foot waves, 50-mile-an-hour winds over the weekend, rain, sleet, snow, hail, all kinds of things coming down. It made me think our mega Monday morning quiz would be about Lake Michigan and the Great Lakes. But there's a little word to keep in mind if you're trying to remember the Great Lakes. Homes. Our lake is on the home. The lakes are on the homes. Or the homes are on the lake. That's it.
Yes.
So HOMES stands for Huron, Ontario.
Michigan, Erie, Superior. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So if that helps, I mean, if you're, say you're in a bind and somebody comes up to you and says, quick, what are the five Great Lakes?
How come I didn't learn that?
Or I'll shoot.
That?
Yeah. Then bam, you just go, oh, homes. Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, and Singapore. The big five.
Superior.
Thank you for the tip on that.
That's not related to Patrick Mahomes, by the way, is it? Because now I bring us full circle.
Mahomes! The Oscar nominees are out. You may have heard Bob Surratt and Dean Richards talking about that a little while ago. On Saturday mornings, my producer friend Griffin Filipich counsels us on movies. He's got some hot takes for you and at least some recommendations to go see. I don't expect you to go see all nine movies. If you don't want to watch a movie made in South Korea with subtitles, don't, although you're supposed to. You really should. And I don't know that that's such a barrier anymore, because how many of you are watching TV or movies in English with subtitles scrolling across the bottom of your screen now?
I do.
A lot of us do.
I watch a movie on my iPad. I'm always using the closed captioning.
We've got a pretty large TV screen at our house, larger than we even want, and there the letters are. And it just seems like everybody's kind of digging that. It's, I don't know why, because your eyes are now down there, but you're able to do both, watch the show and read at the bottom. And for some reason, even younger people I know, my sons are in their 20s and 30s, and they watch TV and movies that way, too. I'm kind of mystified by that, to be honest with you. I'm not critical. I just had never thought about it, and yet most of us find ourselves doing that. Well, if we're doing that, then maybe watching a foreign language film doesn't seem so intimidating. This one says, met Dave Kaplan last year at Under Armour store on Michigan Avenue.
Was he walking out of the dressing room wearing a skin-tight top? I'm sorry, was that mean? Is that sort of counter to the whole feeling? We love him.
We really do.
We really do.
Dave worked here for years. Now he works at a competing radio station. We wish him modest success. When I was talking about people who sow the seeds of kindness wherever they go, the Ron Santos, the Walter Paytons in this town, Dave Kaplan has always been one of them. He was such a nice human. Told him he looked good in the coat he was trying on.
See?
Well, there you go.
I'm sure fashion was involved.
I know. I like talk radio when they talk about things. Let's talk about things. Friday's show, we spent some time talking about brushes with celebrities and the kindness they may have shown you. Dave Kaplan's name popped up. It was about fashion, of course. And why wouldn't it be?
Of course.
I remember saying to him once, why do you have a sherbet-colored jacket? He said, why don't you have a sherbet-colored jacket? It's 9:39. So the Oscar nominees are out. The one that got the most nominations is that Joker flick.
You just ask the same questions every week. How's your job? Are you having any negative thoughts? All I have are negative thoughts.
Joaquin Phoenix is the Joker. And I don't know, are you surprised? 11 Academy Award nominations. Producer Griffin works with us on Saturday and watches more movies than anybody I know and cares about them almost more than he should. I asked him to jump on here and give us some hot takes on some of these. Hey, Griff, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. Is that a correct description of you? Watches more movies than anybody I know and maybe cares about them a little too much. True or false?
I don't know who you know, but I do care too much, and that makes the Oscars a very difficult time because they have a storied tradition of frustrating everyone.
Frustrating you, that's for sure. Are you frustrated this morning? Are you happy, or are you frustrated with the way
that there's a time where I would have been more frustrated with this morning. I've gotten better at contextualizing and not caring as much about the Oscars. But, yeah, there's some frustrating things happening, but it's an interesting batch.
Well, what do you think of the Joker with 11 nominations?
That would be probably one of the more frustrating frustrating category, but not totally unsurprising. I think some of those nominations are ones that not everyone expected. Director, I think we expected to see Joaquin Phoenix for actor, and he'll probably win is how it feels like right now, although things can change in the next month, so don't hold me to any of these predictions. My predictions will probably change too, but that's, we already thought he might win, and it's looking more like that now for actor.
Yeah.
Todd Phillips for Best Director is a little more surprising, and that's a tell that this movie has more widespread support among the Academy than we might have thought before. So,
Right. We'll answer this for me. Answer this question. Should people go see The Joker? Because the trailers, to me, I'm like sucked in. I'm like, oh my God, is that a magnetic, charismatic performance? That really looks interesting. But it really looks creepy, and I understand it's really violent, and I don't know that I want to go there, you know?
I think you should, if you want to have an opinion on anything, you have to see it. So if you're interested in having an opinion on it, you definitely need to see it. It was not close to one of my favorite movies of the year. Joaquin Phoenix is one of the best actors of the generation, maybe the best, with Adam Driver as the only competition, really. So you want to see anything he does in a lead performance like this is kind of must-see for anyone who cares.
What do you think of the Best Picture nominees? Okay. I'm looking at the list. The Irishman, Marriage Story, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I love those movies. I haven't seen them all. But if somebody said, what's a good movie to go see? Any of those, to me, would be excellent choices. You surprisingly really liked Little Women.
I loved Little Women. It's nice to see it on there. It was sort of waning in the support that people thought it had in the Academy, so it's nice to see it get nominations kind of throughout the board, except for director, which for Greta Gerwig, which a lot of people wanted, and it's notably, you know, she was the only woman who seemed to have a fighting chance to get a Best Director nomination. She didn't, and that's, you know, that's a shame. But it is nice to see it in picture and screenplay and two actor nominations, especially Florence Pugh is amazing in that movie. So.
I was happy to see Laura Dern get an actress in supporting role nomination for Marriage Story.
She'll probably win. That's been expected for a long time. What was shocking about that category is Jennifer Lopez did not get nominated. That's actually, to me, the biggest takeaway from the morning. I was stunned by that. I thought everyone thought that would be a two-person race for as long as Hustlers has been out, and instead she's not even there. That's totally bizarre.
Hustlers did not get nominated for Best Picture either. Do you care about that?
No, I mean, to be honest, that was not my favorite movie, but it makes no sense that Jennifer Lopez isn't there. That was, like, a huge performance, one of the performances of the year. I don't think that it had much support in any other category, and that's probably what hurt it. Hurt her for that category, but it's totally bizarre. And wouldn't you just want Jennifer Lopez at your awards ceremony?
Well, she's
not even going to be there. It's stupid.
I hadn't thought about it in those terms. One last thing, Griffin. The Best Actor nominees, Antonio Banderas, Pain and Glory, Leo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Adam Driver, Marriage Story, Joaquin Phoenix for Joker, Jonathan Pryce, The Two Popes. That's a pretty good category, isn't it?
That was always going to be, like, the most crowded category. And the things that are left off are equally good, probably better. I mean, De Niro's not there for The Irishman, which is insane. Eddie Murphy, I was hoping would get nominated for Dolomite Is My Name. He didn't get it.
Yeah.
And Adam Sandler for MGM. These are all would have been really fun, exciting nominations. I'm glad Antonio Banderas is there. That one was always going to be loaded.
Adam Sandler's movie was?
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems, yeah, right. Oh, that's interesting, because I know that was a polarizing film, but even if you didn't like the movie, you've got to give the guy credit. He doesn't get credit. He's not nominated. How about that?
Huh? Yeah, I'm not super surprised, but it would have been nice to see it. There's a couple films that I just want to fit in really quickly. The Farewell didn't get any nominations, and that would have been nice to see sneak in, especially in the supporting actress category for Judge Jen. My favorite performance of the year. That's really disappointing that it happened. And best song, we would just watch this movie, Wild Rose. And the final song from that movie was not nominated, which is a huge bummer.
Yeah, we're out of time, Griffin, but go watch right. Wild Rose. And Griffin's right. I actually looked to see if that song was nominated, and it wasn't. You'll thoroughly love this movie. You'll thoroughly love the last song. And you will cry a lot of, I'll say, tears. You decide if they're happy or sad at the end of the movie. What a great movie Wild Rose is. It was one of the best movies I've seen in a really long time. We're out of time, Griff. Nice to talk to you, my friend.
All right, thanks.
One last quick note about the movie nominees. What did you want to say, John? You're on the air. Hi.
Well, John, you were talking about The Joker. My family over the holidays had a big discussion about whether even to see it. We had 14-year-old nephews in the room. We had 16-year-olds. Their argument was, oh, such a great movie, you know, really teaches you a lot about mental illness. And I responded with, you know, I don't really need to see a mass shooting to learn about mental illness. And I read a great review in Time magazine, and whoever the guy was said, yeah, great performance again, but bigger picture, what are we saying, what are we doing when we continue to put mass killings in movies? I remember when the El Paso shooting took place, the Joker was released that weekend, they withheld it from the city of El Paso because they felt like it would be insensitive to do that. But when are we really going to ask? And
what did your family decide to do, by the way? What did your family do, John?
Well, they all went. My grandson did not. I did not let my grandson go. My 14-year-old grandson did not go.
Yeah, I think that was probably a smart decision. I think that was a good decision, John. I'm out of time. I appreciate your phone call. What an interesting thought. I'll look for that article. As we segue now to Peter Greenberg, who does a travel show on WGN Radio. Did you hear him this weekend? I did. Hi, Peter. How are you?
And good morning, John.
You said something on your show on Saturday that really jumped out at me. See, let me see if I got this right, because I'm quoting you wherever I go. Airlines make more money on checked bag fees than on anything else. Is that true?
That is correct. There are two biggest sources of profit. One is they make more money on these ancillary fees. Let me give you this number. The U.S. airlines alone in 2019, $29 billion in ancillary fees. And the other thing they make the most money on, which is going to come to a surprise to many of our listeners, the frequent flyer programs. The airlines sell their miles at about 1.4 cents a mile to banks like Citibank for American Airlines and Chase for United and American Express for Delta. And each year, these three financial institutions will pay the airlines over $1.4 billion each just for those miles, knowing full well, by the way, that the redemption levels of those miles is only about 8%.
Really? People that have miles eat them, they don't use them?
How many unredeemed miles are there right now, John? You're not going to go to the Showcase Showdown on this one. Take a guess.
I have a 1,000,006.
23 trillion.
that people have not used. We could go to Pluto and back in first class, in business, and still have miles left over.
Right. So it's the most amazing return on investment. Mafia loan sharks don't get this kind of return.
Go back to the baggages, though, for a second. So you're telling me that when I pay $25 or $50 for a checked bag, that is the biggest revenue source. Are there any tips? Because you were talking about that over the weekend, too, Peter.
Well, here's the thing. Take a look at Southwest Airlines. They knew that the checked baggage issue was a big negative touch point for their passengers. They've actually branded their entire airline over the past 7 or 8 years by announcing that they're not going to charge for two bags. Now, are their fares competitive with the other airlines? Yes. Are they about the same? Yes. But from a public perception point of view, you're not going to your wallet every time you're checking a bag. The other airlines, they didn't want to leave that money on the table, and guess what? They didn't. So we're talking, think about that. There's no labor involved, over and above the idea of just checking the bag, which they were going to do anyway. And then if you're overweight by 1 pound, that cost goes up between $150 and $300. So it's a little crazy.
I've seen people taking stuff out of one bag and putting it in another, or putting the clothes on in the bag to drive the weight down. But the strategy that kind of makes me crazy, and I know a lot of people do it and it seems to work for them, but I don't, is they take a bag with them to the gate that they know is not going to get on that plane. It's too big. And then they say, it's too heavy or it's too big. And they walk it down the skyway and they just put it on the plane and they don't pay the checked bag fee.
Which angers all the people who did pay for it. I was on a Delta flight recently and I counted 53 bags on the jetway that needed to be loaded back on the plane. And the scam is this, and I understand the reason for it, and so do you, that if you can get it through the security checkpoint, if it actually fits in that conveyor belt and weighs under 50 pounds, you get to play the game at the gate. And in most cases, the airline will say, well, we're going to have to check that bag at no charge. And you go, oh, really? Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So do you recommend that, Peter? I mean, you and I might not like that, but if they're going to let us get away with it, why not?
Well, it all depends on the airline and even particularly the airport itself. Denver is particularly tough on this. They will check the bag and charge you at the gate. They've got the facility to do that now. But other airlines, it's more important for them to get the plane pushed back on time because they lose more money that way than they'd ever gain for charging you the $25 or $35 to check the bag. It's really a crapshoot.
I guess it's a decision that you have to make. It seems to me like the fee should be for bringing the baggage onto the plane, because then you don't have to go down to the carousels afterwards. There's no great convenience for me checking my bag, and I have to pay a premium for that. To me, it should be the other way around.
It actually gets worse than that. because I came across a confidential memo to all the Delta gate agents that looked at every one of their planes by the type of plane and how many bags could actually fit in the overhead compartment versus the number of passengers that could be carried on that plane. And with no exceptions, they could only handle half the carry-on bags to the number of passengers that were on the plane. So right then and there, you've got a problem. Hmm.
Peter, now your show is new to WGN Radio the last few Saturdays, and it kind of floats around in the middle part of the day on Saturdays. Sometimes it'll appear, I think, on Sundays, too. But you've been doing this for a while, huh?
We've been doing the radio show now. We're coming up on our 19th year, and we do it literally from a different location in the world every week.
I noticed.
I'm going down today, by the way. We're going to tape one today on the most amazing cruise ship you've never heard of, and I guarantee you've never heard of it. It's called the Astoria. And this is a ship that is the oldest cruise ship in the world. It's 73 years old, and nobody even knows it's still sailing because it's had 11 different owners, 9 different names, but its claim to fame, get ready for this, for those people old enough to remember this, back in 1956, it was called the Stockholm, and this was the ship that rammed into the Andrea Doria and sank it, the largest maritime disaster in U.S. history, and this ship is still sailing.
Peter Greenberg, Weekends on WGN Radio. Nice to hear you, Peter. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Anytime, John.
Have a good morning. 10:08, this is WGN. I'm John Williams. By the way, we were talking about the game tonight, the college championship, the BCS, which stands for Big College Super Game.
Actually, it's not the BCS anymore.
It's the...
Sorry. It's been gone for like 5 years. It's the College Football Playoff Championship.
Whatever. By the way, here's another name. Speaking of remembering things, so we said if you want to remember the five Great Lakes, you remember the word Holmes, Huron, Ontario, Michigan, Erie, Superior. If you want to remember all of the states that are on the Mississippi River, somebody texted this in.
Because this comes up often.
What if it does? hey, Smarty Pants, name all of the states that are on the border of the Mississippi River.
Minnesota and Louisiana and those ones in between.
Yep. And Wisconsin and Iowa.
Wisconsin doesn't make the list. Wait a minute, what does this say here? It says, John, to remember what states are on the Mississippi River, think MIMAL, M-I-M-A-L, MIMAL. Minnesota, comes down Minnesota, Iowa.
Yeah.
Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana. Well, this isn't
what about
right,
Illinois?
Because Illinois is not on this
yeah.
list.
Well, I'm pretty... Isn't... Doesn't the Mississippi...
All right, I'm just throwing this one okay. away. That's a real bad mnemonic device. But you have an interesting... I think this is fascinating. If you're going to watch the Little League World Series tonight, you can watch it on ESPN. But there are 14 other ways
yes.
to watch the college championship game tonight.
Right.
Okay, so what are you talking about?
Okay, we've got all the various ESPN channels.
All right, so if I watch it on ESPN, I see the main broadcast.
Yeah, that's what Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit and your regular...
What is ESPN doing? Two.
ESPN2 is doing something called the Field Pass. Well, they'll have a couple of their broadcasters walking around the sidelines and interviewing people and doing commentary and just sort of talking about the game.
So this would be like the View if I was on the sidelines just hanging out with people.
Yes. Yes.
That's kind of cool.
It is.
So it's not live play-by-play then. It's just
not
the game
really.
Is going on
no.
and you're there.
But Adam Amin, who's a local guy from here, who's one of their play-by-play guys, is going to be... one of the guys on the sidelines.
I like that. All right. What else are they offering?
They are offering the coach's film room. And they've done these the last few years. The coach's film room is on ESPNU, which some people have, some don't, I guess, on their cable systems. But they have four college coaches who will be sitting in a room watching the game and commenting on it as it goes along. So more of an X's and O's, hardcore X's and O's kind of thing.
Are they doing the play-by-play from the hometowns of the two teams?
They are going to have that, too. They will have ESPN has both the ACC and the SEC networks. So the SEC network, and LSU is part of the SEC, they will have the LSU radio broadcast.
They'll run that audio over the video.
They'll run that audio over the video. And the ACC network will have the Clemson radio broadcast with the video.
I forget when I got tricked by this, but I was watching a game like this. Maybe it was last year, the year before. Mm-hmm. I was watching it on TV, and it wasn't the radio play-by-play I don't think I was listening to. I think it was TV play-by-play, but it was very one-sided. And on the radio the next day, a lot of us were outraged that the announcers were so one-sided, right. But we were getting that feed.
That's what
they
it was.
Do that with the men's basketball championship, right?
Yeah, they do it.
Maybe
they
that's
it,
what I was
yeah.
catching.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of something that's happening more and more, but this college football championship has been the one where they've been doing this, and now they're expanding it. They have one channel, ESPN Classic, where there won't be announcers. They'll just have all of the sound coming from inside the Superdome and just the natural sound from inside the stadium.
What's the overhead view?
They have something called All 22, and this is on the app. You have to have the ESPN app. And they have one that's called SkyCast, which is a camera kind of behind the offense but above it. And so basically you're looking from above behind the quarterback. And then they have one called All 22, which is an overhead shot. All 22 players on the field will be visible.
So you can kind of see how it develops, what yes. it looks like overhead mm-hmm. instead of those micro views.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of cool.
And they got a couple other ones.
And then does that even begin to address the Spanish language and the various language
channels?
No, they
have a Spanish language call. That's the only foreign language that they have, I believe.
I want the one that focuses on the right tackle in Swahili. Do they have that one?
They will, now that you've mentioned it.
A lot of my Swahili friends who are fans of the offensive side linemen on the right of the center are really looking forward to that.
Oh, that'll be
great. Put a lot of pressure
on
the
also
network.
Have a ref cast on the app where they'll have some referees sitting in a room and commenting on the
seriously.
Game as it goes along.
You know, I don't know that this could happen, but I think about this all the time. You know how when people are watching a game and they cuss, or they're just irreverent and they're mm-hmm. being silly, but I don't know if you get a couple of comedians who know the game really well or what, but I just think there are times where, you know, like the ref makes a call and everybody goes, oh, that's BS. Wouldn't it be kind of fun if the announcers go, oh, that's a bunch of, and they actually use those words?
Well, this is on the app, so really they could do it.
They could.
They're not constrained.
And maybe the college football doesn't want to go there.
Probably
but
not.
I think it would be hilarious if you got, I don't know who, but you could find people that, you know, had something to say about the game that was relevant.
You know who'd be
but
great?
But we're just completely off the chain.
How about Frank Caliendo in different voices? Like he's got John Gruden there and he's doing all his John Madden.
Well, who's the Saturday Night Live guy that did the NFL Monday Night Football? Steve, you know who it was.
Oh, your friend, Dennis Miller.
Dennis Miller.
Right.
Oh, right, right.
Dennis Miller was, you know, too smart for the game,
right.
But I'm sure he could work a little blue. I don't know why I'm so interested in cussing, because I'm not a big fan of that in media. But
Dave, there was a famous interview where John interviewed Dennis Miller.
We are about ready for a break here, Steve. So
and,
if you could
and
just,
at the end, John said, hey, next time you're in town, come by.
Go ahead, finish that. This is a really funny story.
Dennis said, yeah, that's not going to happen.
We were connecting. We were really connecting. Sometimes you just go, wow, I think you and I could be friends. And I said that to him. And I said, the next time you're in town, let's get together. He said, yeah, we're not going to do that.
What? Okay. Well, maybe he was busy.
Well, it was kind of an open-ended invitation.
For the rest of his life.
It was kind of him saying, yeah, as long as I draw air, we're not grabbing a cup of coffee. It's 10:14. Did you guys see the story? Well, thank you for that, Dave. So
sure.
I'm probably going to watch it on the regular channel, but I might click around and see some of those. That Million Moms organization that seems to be getting more publicity than it deserves these days has put out a missive against Burger King because they have this non-beef burger patty that they're selling now. Have you seen this thing?
The Impossible Whopper?
Yes.
So this conservative moms group, this is CNN's website, group slams Burger King for using the D word in a commercial. And that's the headlines everywhere. Now, there's a D word that pops up sometimes on mainstream media. I don't use it, and I don't like it. The word damn, I'm okay with. Lordy, I'm okay with that. But that's what it is. In the commercial, a guy goes, damn, that's good. And they are outraged by this. The ad was posted online in August when Burger King began sales at stores nationwide. But on Friday, 1 million moms posted a press release criticizing the use of the D word in the commercial. Quote, 1 million moms finds this highly inappropriate. When responding to the taste test, he did not have to curse or in fact, it was a real, if it was a real and unscripted interview in which the man was not an actor, then Burger King could have simply chosen to edit the profanity out of the commercial. Burger King's Impossible Whopper ad is irresponsible and tasteless. It is extremely destructive and damaging to impressionable children viewing the commercial. We all know children repeat what they hear. According to its website, more than 8,000 people have taken action on the Burger King issue. I'm not exactly sure what the action is they take. Maybe they didn't go buy the burger. And its Facebook group has just shy of 100,000 likes. No, I'm okay with that one. We were watching Saturday Night Live Saturday night, what with it being Saturday night and all. It was a rerun. But in that, they used GD. They said God D. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of, I said to the room, because nobody flinched, I said, I'm a little surprised to see them use that. I know it's 10:30 on a Saturday night, but I'm not comfortable with that. I'm old school enough. Damn doesn't bother me. God in front of it does. I mean, I was really surprised that that phrase appeared for comedic purposes on Saturday Night Live.
I think they used stronger language than that the week before with Eddie Murphy, or a couple of weeks ago when he was on.
Do you remember the word that you're thinking of?
The S word.
Really?
Yeah.
He said that and they didn't bleep it?
No.
Are you kidding me?
I could swear I heard it.
That is not true. There's no way that happens.
Okay.
Where have I been? I wonder what you think. 312-981-7200. I can't imagine, but if you do, go ahead and call. We'll be nice to you, that the D word bothers you. I just think in this day and age, our children have seen so much more, have read so much more, have heard so much more, are using so much more, that while you won't want that coming out of your 8-year-old's mouth or your 14-year-old's mouth, I don't know where you draw the line, but them hearing it on a Burger King commercial is not offensive to me at all. To me, that's saying, wow, it's wow, that was super good.
Yes.
I don't. It resonates the same way with me. Another substitute for damn is darn. Let's see if that would work. That's a darn good hamburger. Yeah, maybe that works. Maybe they could substitute darn for damn.
Or but dang.
Dang.
It's a dang good hamburger.
Yeah, no kidding. Mary, that works, especially the way you said it just now.
That's because I have a mouthful of chocolate.
312-981-7200. I'm looking for what's happening at your house about this right now. Speaking of that impossible burger at Burger King, we'll talk just a little more food. Kristen McQuarrie, who writes some of the editorials in the Chicago Tribune over the weekend, tweeted that she was sending pizzas to a loved one, a family member out of state. What's the best pizza to ship? Is it Gino's? Is it Malnati's? Or is it somebody else? And I noticed that she put it out and it got like a couple of likes and a couple of retweets, and right away, bam, 150 comments, which is a great line score, I told her, for a tweet that is very interactive. And I said, so what did you get? What's the best pizza to ship? What arrives the best? What tastes the best in that version? She said, oh, I'll tell you after 10:30. This is good to know. First, Timothy, you're on WGN. How are you, Tim? You're on the air.
Oh, pretty good. I haven't heard the commercial or anything, but just the point of the swear words. When I was younger, I would never use those two words together or even one of them, because if you think about it, every swear word out there, I don't care what you think of that you've ever called or said anything, describes something. And those two words, either together or one apart, is basically just saying that you want to damn somebody.
Right, right. You want to,
I mean,
sure.
Think of any word that you want in your head. The S word, even the B word describes a female dog. But you think of that word and you're basically telling somebody that you're going to damn somebody. And that's why it was always really, really offensive to me. I would never use it. And if somebody said it, I would call them out on it.
What about if somebody uses the word dang or darn, which are derivatives of damn, which are short for what you're talking about? So does that bother you?
If it was my kids, I'd tell them, you know, you gotta watch your language kind of thing, because it does kind of remember. But even me, when I was younger, I would never say the S word. I'd say shoot, because I didn't really want to swear, you know. But
I'm okay with shoot. I'm okay. I have no trouble with you saying shoot if you're looking for permission here, Tim.
Yeah, but like I said, I mean, you just think of any swear word, you call anybody. I mean, I don't care what the word is. It describes something, including those. It describes. And the thing about it is you never really want to say that to or for, or even describing something and saying that's a dang good hamburger or something like that. I mean, you're actually, condemning the hamburger.
Well, we all get our own ears and we all get our own mouths. We get to hear things the way we want and say things the way we want. And I guess that's the peril for Burger King. Nobody's going to take offense if they said a dang good burger, as Mary Vandeveld will when she gets that gig. Or, shoot, that was a good hamburger. Nobody has a problem with that. But if you think those lead to other thoughts and words, I guess you get to judge them accordingly. But I won't blame Burger King for being that broad. I don't mind them using the dang word. I appreciate your call, Timothy. 847, John, I had a swear jar when my kids said something offensive. They had to put money in the jar. Guess who got the money? John, I'm a conservative guy. I'm okay with D and not okay with GD. Well, I think that's where most of us are. About having a couple of announcers on one of the ESPN platforms doing the games, but working at Blue, talking the way you and I would, maybe, if we're having a couple of beers with our buddies, screaming at the refs.
Yeah.
John, Beavis and Butthead calling a game would be awesome. But I don't want stupid. I don't know how where Beavis and Butthead check in on smart versus stupid. I know they could be, a couple of dudes that are funny and blue. But I also want some intelligent commentary as well. I don't know who that would be. Maybe Dennis Miller, maybe not.
So which of the forbidden words would you use to describe that Packer play where he fumbled and then they recovered it and they replay showed that they fumbled, but not who recovered it?
Yeah, right. You're asking me what word I'm shouting out at the TV? There was a lot of shouting going on, I think, at the TV over the weekend.
It was a weird game.
The fake punt, I think, got some people scratching their heads. And frankly, just the second half comeback had people just screaming, I can't believe it, and maybe throwing in some colorful words as well.
Second quarter.
Yeah, no kidding. My son said after, what was it, the Chiefs scored their first touchdown, this game isn't over. There's still enough time for them to catch up. And wow, did they, huh? John, no words should be considered bad. Any word used to hurt is bad, whether it is a curse word or not. Dan, you're on WGN. What did you want to say, Dan? You're on the air. Hi.
Good morning. Listening, I'm sure you noticed there's a cruise line on TV. It's kind of odd that their theme song is White Rabbit. And I just think, my wife and I just look at each other like, why would you have a theme song about taking drugs to make you feel good or up, down or anything like that,
Oh, no kidding.
I find it odd. Yeah. As I'm driving, I can't think of the cruise line, but it's all over TV. You pick a station, you'll see it.
And I can hear it in my head now, too. It would be one of the big ones, obviously.
Yeah.
I have to now I shouldn't do this. Maybe I will, though. Now I'm going to go back and listen to the song. Does in the commercial it make any references to psychedelic experience, or it's just a good melody?
Yeah, it's just, the words, one pill makes you this and one pill makes you that. And, I'm going like, woo, it was just fine back when we grew up with it, but they have it on commercial. I don't disagree with it.
It's funny. I'm just now hearing that in my head. All right. Thanks for the phone call. Thanks, Dan. I'm going to play it on the radio now. Appreciate it.
Okay.
It's terribly inappropriate. I'll play it in just a second. Stick around. John, I get it, but it doesn't bother me. My kids are 2 and 4, and they are in the polyparrot stage. They repeat everything. 331 said, Eddie Murphy did say the S word during his Gumby portion late in Saturday Night Live. John, I had high expectations of my kids. Don't know if that was a pun. 312, bad words on the air. Maggie Smith's character on Downton Abbey said, vulgarity is no substitute for wit. I don't entirely agree with that. I think there's an art to cussing. Some people are good at it. If you hit your thumb with a hammer and you cuss, I think that's just a physical... That's okay. I don't matter that. some people may substitute bad language because they can't think of something else to say, and that's seen as a poor substitute. But every now and then, remember Richard Pryor? And Eddie Murphy when he's blue? I think some of that stuff is hilarious. Dave Chappelle sure has a lot of off-color language, and never once did I think that was inappropriate for Dave Chappelle. I think every time he uses a bad word, it works. That's just me. So they're worried about impressionable minds, eh, John? And yet they're brainwashing them with religion. They're hypocrites. I don't know where that came from. John, you're attempting to damn kids because kids have heard worse. You're accepting the word damn because kids have heard worse. Does that really make any sense to you? That's how they get used to the worst ones. I don't know. When I get to be king, I'm going to allow the word damn in commercials for Burger King ads. It's 10:30 now. We'll pause. Steve's going to update you on WGN Radio News. And then afterwards, Kristen McQuarrie, the columnist for the Chicago Tribune and an editorial writer there, posted on Twitter over the weekend, if I'm shipping a pizza from Chicago, what's the best pizza to ship? How many of the nominated movies did you see, Steve?
You know, I don't have the exact number, but I think I did pretty well this year.
Yeah, I was feeling that, and then I saw that I only saw 3 of the 9 nominated for Best Picture.
Although I count that as pretty well.
I've seen some in the other categories. I'm going to go see Joker. A lot of you are telling me, hey, it's not that violent. There are some violent scenes, but it's not 2.5 hours of carnage and mayhem.
I'm at this point right now, not that I just want to see happy things, really, but... You know, someone was suggesting a series that's about a serial rapist. I'm like, yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that.
It's a really good series. It really is.
That's what I hear.
It's really good. It's really good.
What's it called? It's called, I've forgotten what it's called now.
I'll look it up. Brenda and I watched it, and I thought, wow. Especially since the first episode is much about the act itself, and it's tough. But then what happens afterwards, and its true story, is really compelling.
Okay, I'm looking at the Best Picture nominees. I guess I've only seen 2, but I've wanted to see a lot of them.
Well, there you go. I find that I don't really need to see things in order to have strong opinions about them. But I will say this. The nominees for Best Supporting Actor are Tom Hanks, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And a lot of people think this is Tom Hanks' year. But then there's Anthony Hopkins for The Two Popes. Brad Pitt for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And some people think it's Brad's turn in Gone it, is he good in that movie. Then you got Joe Pesci for The Irishman, and I think he was the best thing in The Irishman. I would certainly give it to him over Al Pacino, who is also nominated for The Irishman. So go pick him on that one. Wow. That's as they say, a stacked category.
That's a Brad Pitt winner right there.
I hope so. I think he's terrific in that movie, and he has not won. So it's maybe time. Kristen McQuarrie writes editorials and sometimes columns for the Chicago Tribune, and she posted on Twitter over the weekend that, and by the way, Steve, when you remember the name of that series, let us know, okay?
Yeah, right.
Because it really is worth seeing, unless you don't want to see it, and then you absolutely should not see it. So Kristen McQuarrie posted, I'm shipping pizzas to somebody. Which of these 3 pizzas best ships? I think that was the idea. Hi, Kristen. How are you? Welcome back.
Hello. I'm hungry. Just thinking about this topic.
I just, when I saw that, I thought, wow. And then I saw the comments number, and I thought, what a great tweet, because you obviously tapped into something people care about, have opinions about. Am I right?
You cannot get Chicagoans to stop having strong opinions about pizza. So, yes, I am shipping pizza to my grandparents. I'm so lucky I still have grandparents who are alive and doing well, and you don't have to throw their food in the blender. And they live in Fort Myers. And I'm telling you, I can't believe with all the transplants from Chicago to Florida that there is no good pizza. There's certainly no good pizza delivery. So I put the question on Twitter, which restaurant should I ship from?
But you asked, by the way, the TV series that Steve and I were talking about is unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's unbelievably good. Unbelievably difficult to watch at first. You will be glad you spent the time, says me. So you asked about 3 chains, though, right? Malnati's, Gino's, and somebody else. Is that what you did?
Yes, Lou Malnati's, Gino's East, or Giordano's.
Yeah.
And do you want the drum roll response?
Yeah, go ahead and give it to me now, because I got plenty to say about all 3 of them.
Okay. Overwhelming response. 88 out of over 100, almost 160 responses. 88 said you got to go with Lou's. I got 9 for Gino's East, 10 for Giordano's, and the rest were other. So Lou Malnati's.
What came up a lot in the other?
Uno.
Yeah.
Labriola came up a couple of times, which is just up the street from me and just a little bit west for you.
Yeah.
Paisano's came up quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And then people were suggesting places in Florida.
But was there geography involved in this at all?
What do you mean?
Well, I'm thinking like Gino's. I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's a Southside presence much for Gino's East.
Right. I think if you Malnati's so blankets the market with marketing and delivery locations that I'm not so. No one's surprised by that. That tends to be Chicagoans' favorite pizza. Although when you ask a lot of Chicagoans, they almost don't want to say Malnati's, right, Kristen? Because they want to say something that feels a little more local to their neighborhood.
Exactly. So Aurelio's, there is a location in, I think, Fort Myers or Naples or someplace that for Aurelio's, which is my favorite pizza here, or like a Nick and Vito's. Nobody wants to say Lou. But these were three that I looked up that actually ship. And shipping was, I guess, Lou's delivers on dry ice. It's easy to pop it in frozen and still get that authentic flavor. And then so I started learning about the pizza. Do you know what Lou Malnati's secret ingredient is? What's your guess?
The tomatoes. The tangy tomatoes. They put cinnamon in the tomato. I'm making this up. I don't know. There's something about the tomatoes. I love the tomato sauce on Malnati's pizza. What's the secret ingredient?
Water. Lake Michigan water. They say that the crust cannot be duplicated. They do use fresh Roma tomatoes and Wisconsin cheese, and they put a layer of sliced mozzarella right on the crust on the bottom, then the toppings, then the sauce.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
And the other thing that I'll just give Lou's this is that it tastes like I've had the frozen. I buy the frozen pizzas at their store in a lot. We've shipped it as well, and I've had it shipped to me. I think I've consumed Lou's about every way you can. And any way you get it, it pretty much is the same, you know, which must not be easy to do. But if you're shipping to your friends in Florida, that's nice to know, isn't it?
It is. And I did this a couple years ago, and they thought that it shipped well because my grandparents live in North Fort Myers, sort of in a rural area. And sure enough, this truck shows up. It's all on dry ice. They have a package of six, so I spent like $130 to feed my family down in Florida, but it's going to be delivered on Wednesday. They're very excited. So,
but you know, you think that if you were especially, well, any of those really, if I was any of those big Chicago names of pizza, knowing how many people live in Florida or Arizona, for crying out loud, I would have a bunch of stores there, but they don't, do they?
They don't. I mean, it is shocking to me every time we go, and because my grandparents live there, we go a lot. And sometimes midweek, we want a pizza delivered. We want a good Chicago pizza. And I mean, you really can't get bad pizza here. So to go down there and open up the phone book, and you literally have to choose from Papa John's. Maybe I shouldn't name names.
Yeah, you sure can.
I don't want to disrupt any of your sponsors your show, but every chain. And then we've tried a couple of the chains that are down there. Awful. They're crap pizza. Am I allowed to say that? They're terrible. And so it's surprising to me with all of the transplants that someone hasn't opened and made a gazillion dollars selling real pizza in Florida.
I was talking to somebody in the management team of Malnati's at their open house that they had for the new location in the Wrigley building. Have you been to the one in the Wrigley building yet?
I have not.
Yeah, if you go to the Wrigley building right around on the north side, you walk in and go down the steps, and it's this old cavernous space that's like 100 years old with that building, and they've kept like the original floor tiles. It kind of has a kind of old school feel down there. Anyway, they've got a location there. I was talking to them about it. I said, I used to live in Minneapolis, and Minnesotans are so she about their pizza. They think they have the best pizza in the world, and they don't even have pizza up there. I said, if you, and there's plenty of Chicagoans, just like you were saying, Kristen, in the Twin Cities, if you guys opened up a Lou's in the Twin Cities, the line would be around the block forever. They said, it is difficult to sometimes open a chain in another city. that you've got to go through all sorts of hoops, to say nothing of maybe the parochial tastes or resistance in some neighborhoods. But they said it just wasn't a very welcoming business proposition for them to come from out of state. That's a lot to say. I just wonder if where you and I say, oh, it would be so easy, just throw a thing in Fort Myers, maybe it's not as easy as it sounds.
I think probably you're right. And Malnati's tried to open a restaurant or did open a location just in Elgin outside of near O'Hare. And the water was not, they did not have Lake Michigan water. So what do? They ship the water to Elgin. So if that's such a really? Key component of their pizza, you do not want Florida water. It is.
I think that is a key component of their marketing. I mean, I'm a little hard pressed, Kristen, to believe that the Chicago lake water somehow makes the pizza better, but it sounds to me like a great way to differentiate your pizza, to distinguish it from the rest.
Yes, I could agree with that. And I just think, I mean, Minnesota, really, they think they have good pizza. They eat pizza rolls. They don't eat pizza. They don't have good pizza in Minnesota.
They get the kind. You get the kind of pizza up there that they say, we'll just put a little sprinkle of oregano, and then we'll just garnish it with a thin coating. Like, no, just put some pizza food on there. Get some tomatoes and cheese and sausage, and then serve the dang thing. It's so disappointing.
I just looked up Minnesota famous foods, and you know what came up? Malto meal. So there you go. Need you say more?
Will you take a couple calls with me real quick?
Sure.
Okay, Kristen McQuarrie's on the phone, editorial writer and columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Former Mincing Rascal, until she got too busy for us. Steve, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi, Steve.
Hi, John. A few years ago, we were in the Lakewood Lou Malnati's, and we were talking to the bartender, and he said he was leaving the next day to open a brand-new Lou Malnati's down in Arizona. And he said they had to truck Chicago water down to Arizona to get the right taste. I don't know if they've kept doing that. I don't know if they do that every week or
That's
something.
Crazy.
My guess is they do.
Wow.
But they said you have to have Chicago water to get the right taste.
How about that, Kristen? You're on it. I had no idea this was a thing.
I know. But the crust, their buttery crust, is one of the reasons that it is an outstanding product. And so, yeah, I mean, have you ever tried to make a pie crust or something and imagine having kind of rusty water that's not fresh lake water?
Right. I guess so. I never thought about that. So when Kristen McQuarrie at the Tribune asked her Twitter followers, what's the best pizza to ship? Obviously, Chicagoans love Malnati's, and 2-1, or 50% of the respondents, it sounds like, were Lou's, and then the rest split among other options.
Yeah. That's right. Exactly right.
What are you writing? What are you working on, Kristen, as I let you go?
Oh, well, I'm going to have a column in tomorrow's paper that sort of builds on this scandal emerging with House Speaker Michael Madigan and one of his top aides. So you can look for that.
That thing is dark and twisted. The Mincing Rascals talked about that the other day, and here's just my quick hot take on that, Kristen. I cannot believe somebody put that language in an email. I can't believe that somebody in the 21st century thought that an email would not somehow come back to haunt them.
I know. I mean, we've all been trained so thoroughly about emails and their FOIA capability, and here was someone emailing the top two aides in Governor Quinn's office, and there's some news breaking today that apparently he was sort of an oversharer in terms of email, so probably more to come.
Okay, so is that a column or is that an editorial tomorrow?
That is a column.
Kristen McQuarrie in the Chicago Tribune. Nice to talk to you, Kristen. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me, John.
Thanks to Kristen McQuarrie. A little pizza talk. John Aurelio's is in Naples, and 847 said Lou's has a few in Phoenix. Okay, that's good for them. My brother's there now. Hi, King John. Yes, it is the Lake Michigan water. My friend moved to Fort Lauderdale a few years back, said the same thing. The water is the issue of why pizza is not good in Florida. Who am I to argue? But I just don't understand that. John, I'm a Chicago truck driver, and I consider cursing an elite form of the language art. John 708 said, please go see Joker. Yeah, I'm in. I'm going to go. 847, I won't see Joker because I'm tired of Joaquin's vegan PETA agenda. Joaquin Phoenix is a very strange fellow. I didn't see the CBS, the 60 Minutes interview with him. But I just think he's a fellow who's not comfortable in his own skin. He's awkward. He's talented. He doesn't have to be like you or me to be able to do what he does well. And I sure think he does what he does well. Whenever he's on a talk show, it's always cringeworthy. But on the big screen, he's pretty compelling. 847, John, we have a president that swears. He uses the BS word in public and in televised speeches. I would hope that the Burger King mothers who are upset about the word damn in a Burger King commercial are protesting the president. For what kind of model is that for our young children?
You know what my friend Jeannie pointed out at dinner on Saturday?
I do not know what your friend Jeannie pointed out at dinner on Saturday.
Of course not. You weren't there.
I wasn't invited.
At this point of a presidency, we usually do a before and after picture.
Yeah.
Of what the guy looked like when he came into office and how the office has aged him.
Grayed his hair like it did Obama.
And so the president, President Trump, doesn't seem to have changed at all.
No, he has not. He's still using the same colors.
Well, I wondered if, because someone's point at dinner was like, you know, oh, he's not working hard or whatever. But I think it's because what we see of him already is put on in many ways.
He has spent 1 in 5 days of his presidency at one of his resorts, and he's not infrequently golfing. I don't know how relaxing that is, but I'm sure it's that. Lord knows the tension has been high. The hostility that he's receiving and dishing out just has to play on a person. But I think since he colors his face and his hair, 100 years from now, he'll look the same.
Yeah, I guess that's got to be it.
Which,
do we know? We know he colors his face. He tans, right?
I don't even know what that is, but it's some sort of coloration that I think he's putting on his face. I would bet $73 on that. In fact, if I get to be president, I'm going to start coloring my hair that day, and then I'll just keep using the same product the whole time. And they'll go, hey, Williams, he still looks, well, he looks as good as he did the day he was first in office. I'll let you be the judge. Brenda, you're on WGN. What can we do for you? You're on the air. Hi.
You know, John, I can taste the difference in water, in iced tea, from one McDonald's in town to another. For example, in my town, Schaumburg uses Lake Michigan water, and the iced tea at McDonald's tastes crisp and clean. But if I drive over to my work town, such as Elgin, that processes their own water, it's a different taste.
Really? You think if I gave you a blind taste test, you'd pass it?
Yes, sir, I believe I would, and I would gladly accept your pizza as an award.
You know, I swim in Lake Michigan, and friends look at me cross-eyed sometimes because they think, oh, my God, that's polluted or dangerous or something. I'm glad to hear people championing Lake Michigan water as so clean and superior.
Especially since it was in our front yards pretty much all weekend.
That's one of the reasons it's on my mind this weekend. Brenda, that's fascinating. Thank you for the phone call.
You're sure welcome. Bye-bye.
You have a good day. LaVon is on line 4. LaVon, this is John. You're on.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. What's up?
Good. We are out in Scottsdale, Arizona right now, and we were excited when our Luminati's opened here a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And our waiter, who is from Chicago, he goes, you know what the difference is? And we said, no, what's that? He goes, it's the water. They have it. He says they have it shipped in every week, and there's a certain faucet that no employees can use. It's for the pizza only. And he said, oh, that's what they do.
I'm amazed.
I'm amazed, but it tastes great, and we're sure happy it's out here now.
Yeah, no kidding. Are there does that do well, that restaurant out there?
Oh, my gosh. There's one in Scottsdale and one out here in Phoenix, and we take the drive out to Phoenix, but there's always a line.
Yeah.
Always a line. And it's real. And, you know, there's a lot of Chicago people here. I mean, we go to the spring training games, you know, we wear our Cubs shirts. And that's all we see is Cubs people out here. It's really really nice.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, LaVon, thanks for listening to us on the web today.
Take care. Enjoy your radio show.
Enjoy your call. John is on WGN. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hey, John. My Malnati story really isn't about pizza, but it's about what they did in Lawndale, one of the tougher communities in Chicago.
Sure.
They opened the Malnati's probably 20 years ago now, donating 100% of the profits back into this ministry and hiring people that live in the neighborhood. So I think it's not a real well-known story, but pretty cool.
I didn't know that. That location, the one in Lawndale, huh?
Yes, that is one. They, again, donated 100% of profits and hired locals.
Thanks for the phone call, John.
Yep.
Have a good day. Brian, you're on WGN Radio. What's on your mind, Brian?
Good morning, John. It's nice to hear from you. I have two things. Piggyback the pizza. I'd seen it all over town and strip malls and whatnot, but Jeff's Pizza is a hidden gem. Nice and thick and kind of a New York style. It's a hidden gem.
Which one?
Secondly.
Wait, which one?
Jeff's.
Spell it.
J-E-T-S.
Oh, Jeff.
We've had Jet Pizza here. It's very good.
Yeah, it is. I had a Nancy's not long ago, and that shit kind of rocked my world, too. Yeah.
Secondarily, I swim in Lake Michigan also. It's fabulous. It's fabulous. When it's smooth, it's glorious. And plus, swimming on the top, you can see the bottom of the lake.
Yeah.
Whether it's 20 feet down, 30 feet down, whatever. You can see the bottom.
And it's a smooth, sandy finish down there, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. Every day in the summertime, look for me. I know Roger Park took a beating this past weekend, but I live right across from the lake in Rogers Park, and every day in the summertime, I'm there.
Yeah.
I start in the summertime when the water gets to 55 degrees, and I stop when it gets back down to 55 degrees.
What do you do when it gets real cold like that and you're swimming in? Do you have a wetsuit?
No, I don't.
Wow.
What do you do when it gets that cold? You're not in the water that long.
Wow. Brian, thanks for the phone call.
Well, thank you, John.
Yeah, have a good day. John, Joaquin Phoenix was on 60 Minutes last night. He was totally normal. It was really disappointing. Casey, you're on WGN Radio. What can we do for you, Casey? You're on the air.
Hi, John. I just wanted to say that Portillo's buys water to make their chocolate cakes with so that every location the cakes taste exactly the same.
Do they exclusively use Lake Michigan water for the Portillo's cakes?
No, it's a spring water they get from down southern Illinois.
But the secret ingredient in Portillo's cake is, what is it?
Mayonnaise. Gosh.
Mayonnaise.
No, but you're missing the point. The point is that so it's consistent in every location.
Correct.
So they probably buy the same flour and the same mayonnaise, too, so why wouldn't they use the same water?
Water everywhere, because water's H2O. That's why it can't matter that much. But, boy, am I learning something here. It really matters, huh, Casey?
There is a difference.
Wow. Yeah, thanks for the phone call. Oh, hi. I was just reading texts about pizza. It's what we do here at WGN Radio. It's 11:05. I was just recollecting, Steve, that last night, we were talking with Kristen McQuarrie about who has the best shipped pizza in Chicago. And when she asked her followers on Twitter, far and away, they said the best shipped pizza to send to somebody is Malnati's. That's not entirely surprising. It's the big pizza chain around here, and folks really like Malnati's. I'm surprised that there aren't more in other locations. And a lot of you said it's the water that makes the pizza unique, and that literally they ship the water to locations where they don't have access to Chicago water. Another pizza that I just recently discovered was Marie's on Wilson on the north side. I just thought that was terrific. There's a liquor store there, and then there's a little tavern, and inside is this restaurant, and doggone it, was that good.
Pat's is a great north side pizza.
I drove by Nancy's the other day and thought, well, there's the Nancy's near me. So last night I called them up and said, hey, why don't you just send me a pizza? I actually did it online because that's how we do things now. And they don't deliver to my address. I was without an automobile, and I thought, how am I going to get a pizza from Nancy's to my place? So I didn't have a Nancy's pizza last night. I just ate some cashews. But anyway, pizza is a subject that is near and dear to the hearts of many people in Chicago. There's no mistaking that. By the way, the Dow, Steve said, was up 72 points.
Yeah, 69 now.
At like 28.8 something then?
28.894.
Which just 28.894. Okay, so we're that close to 29,000. That's just unbelievable. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it, but it doesn't seem to me that long ago that the market was around 7,000 in 2008 or whenever it was that the dang thing crashed. I mean, think about that. How it's just been kind of a steady climb ever since. And another sort of number that I keep in my head, or try to, is producer Olive can help us with this at 11:07. Hey, producer Olive, where was the market on the day of the presidential election 2016?
Sorry.
Was that your playlist?
Yeah, we'll get you that answer in just a second. But I think it was, where was it, Elif?
On election day 2016, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at 18,589 points, John.
That's almost 11,000 points ago. 11,000 points ago. If you're Donald Trump, that is an insurance policy. You want to get reelected? Get the market around 29,000 for a while. That's amazing.
Well, what percentage of Americans has money in the market?
That less than half.
Oh, I think it's way less than half.
Have a 401k, for instance.
Elif, I can't demand of you, but if you look it up.
Okay, look that up, Elif. What percentage of Americans have money in the market, or which percentage of Americans have a 401k? But money in the market is funny. I've never bought a stock in my life, but I have.
But you measure the economy by it.
Well, because my mutual funds are invested
in stocks. Sure,
So if you have any kind of investment, you're probably into the market that way,
right? That's what I'm asking, yeah.
Okay, but then that's a different thing than maybe do you have a 401k. Your pension money is probably invested in the markets. You're pretty, unless you have it in a, if you have it in any kind of an institutional investment, it's probably in the market in some capacity, right?
Probably, yeah. And that's what I'm wondering what the number is.
Are you looking at something, Producer Elif?
Yes, John.
What? Okay, so I don't even know what the question is, but what are you looking at?
55% of Americans own stock, John.
55%.
Well, there you go. So it's higher than you thought. Higher than I thought.
But okay, here's another question. What percentage of Americans have a 401k? Because the president touts that too. In fact, for a while at his rallies, he was saying, "How is your 401k doing now?" And people would cheer. Most of them didn't have a 401k. I don't even think it matters. The point is, when you hear that the markets are at 29,000, that makes it sound like we're doing good. Even if you turn to the person next to you and say, "How much money are you making?" Or, "How many jobs are you working?" Or, "What are your kids doing?" Or, "Are you still subsidizing your kids?" All of those, I think, are questions that might be answered differently than, "Hey, is the market doing great?" The markets are doing great. Somebody's making money. And if you are fortunate enough to have a 401k or have some sort of investments in the markets, that's an insurance policy for the president.
By the way, the Queen says good riddance to Harry and Meghan.
In what way?
No, not really. They finished their statement, their summit at Sandringham.
Yeah,
she's put out a statement saying she has agreed to let Harry and Meghan move part-time to Canada after a constructive summit.
Really? No, are you reading the language of that thing?
I could. I'm reading an AP News alert.
I mean, this is not a summit. It's not a negotiation. They can do whatever the hell they want, A. And B, it's none of the Queen's business where they live.
Meghan and Harry remain full-time royals, but she respects their wishes for an independent life. You know, it is complicated, though, John. Let me just read part of the statement.
If that's your mother-in-law, and you say, "Hey, we're going to move to Canada," and she goes, "Well, let's meet with your father and your brother, and we'll discuss this." I'm like, go pound sand. I'll move wherever I want.
According to this statement, the family and I are entirely supportive of Harry and Meghan's desire to create a new life as a young family.
Totally supportive, my rear.
Although we would have preferred them to remain full-time working members of the royal family, we respect and understand their wish to live a more independent life. They have made it clear that they do not want to be reliant on public funds in their new lives. It has therefore been agreed that there will be a period of transition in which the Sussexes will spend time in Canada and the UK.
Wait, okay, read that last part about the money.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. They've got to unwind a lot of money. Harry and Meghan have made clear that they do not want to be reliant on public funds in their new lives.
Yeah. Well, especially after you've already got about $27 million in the bank anyway. Now, I think I'm good to go now.
You're going to get by?
I know. I can be self-reliant if you just give me, I don't know, half a dozen years of millions of dollars.
So the statement wraps up, "These are complex matters for my family to resolve, and there is some more work to be done, but I have asked for final decisions to be reached in the coming days."
That's from the Queen.
That's the Queen.
What if something happened in their marriage where they, you know, separated or divorced? Would Harry be able to just come back whenever he wants?
Yo, about that whole separation thing.
You know?
Meghan's gone, and I'm kind of having second thoughts about that.
I mean, they haven't been married very long. You know, I think they just need to give it some time.
I think it's so funny that everyone's blaming Meghan for this.
I'm not blaming Meghan for this.
Oh, no, okay.
But I think you're absolutely right. People are saying, well, that's the word, right? That she was part of the rift between the brothers. And part of the reason that they wanted to get out of England for part of the time is the media over there is so harsh on her, so judgmental.
Who initiated the theory or the conspiracy theory that the Queen had Princess Diana killed?
Oh.
who said that?
Nobody on this show.
No, not on this show. But someone told me that over the weekend, and I was like, I've never heard that before.
I think the big question that a lot of people want answered is just about who the fathers of the brothers are. But
yeah.
After that, I guess there's a million of those. That's the first I've heard of that one.
Yeah, come on, Elif, look around. There's a theory for everything.
That's true.
Don't even repeat that. That's crazy.
But if I would also say this, and I've thought about this, about, say, American children whose parents are very wealthy. I wonder if you grow up your whole life wondering what you could have made of yourself, what your life would have been like had you been independent of that money.
No.
And I'll bet Harry is feeling that I could understand that Harry. And by the way, then think about how complicated it is when you go, okay, and it's not just my family's money that has driven my life, has comforted my life, but it's money from the taxpayers, right? So it's the people. It's all everybody on the bus sitting next to you. They're the ones that bought your shoes. And I think at some point I would think, I'm starting to feel bad about that, especially since I have $87 jillion already.
And he didn't feel bad about it until he got married.
What is the point of that, Mary?
Well, when you say, are you blaming her? I'm not saying I blame her, but she obviously had a lot to do with it. And if, you know, she's being tormented by, you know, the paparazzi or whatever he's so upset about, that's another reason. But still, if he really wanted to leave, he would have left a long time ago.
But that's the fork in the road then. So do I want my children and wife to be happy, and that means disassociating ourselves with the royal family? Or do we want to stay on the public trough where the money is so good and endless and we're celebrities? Which do you choose? And it's maybe a false choice that I'm proposing here, because I'll bet you the money in their bank account is going to tide them over either way.
Yeah, and people are always going to bother them, you know? That's what I don't understand. If they're trying to do it just to protect her, there's always going to be a camera in her face, no matter where they live.
I understand why they did this, Mary. You don't.
I don't know. I don't get it.
Well, put it this way. You don't think it's going to be that effective.
Well,
you don't think that they're going to get away from it all?
Well, maybe not. I mean, Canada will protect them, I think. You know, there won't be as many cameras in their face in Canada.
Yeah, I don't know what it's like there. A headline I saw over the weekend was Canadians shrug at the idea of the royals moving to their country. But maybe, you know, when they pick out an address in Toronto, then it'll really ratchet up.
Well, yeah, I don't think they'll be living in Toronto.
Well, I think they are, aren't they? Aren't they?
Really?
Where are they looking?
Well,
Toronto's a very international city.
I just saw pictures of them, you know, out in the country and enjoying themselves out in the country.
I think they were just out in the West recently.
Western Canada?
Yeah.
If they bought a place in the Gold Coast, say they came to Chicago, or they were up in Winnetka, say, I don't know where they would go. It wouldn't be easy. It would not be easy for them.
No.
The Sun-Times would have somebody there every single day. Don't you think?
And I don't think Toronto is going to be much different now that I think about it.
It's 11:16. This is WGN. Here's the question I have. I'm going to watch that football game tonight. I don't know a lot about college football. LSU's got this pretty good quarterback.
Ryan Burrow.
And is that his name, Ryan Burrow?
His name's Burrow, so Ryan's now calling him Ryan Burrow.
It's funny because Ryan Burrow here is about 5'10", 175, and the starting quarterback for...
Oh, he weighs more than that.
He doesn't. I don't know what he weighs, but Ryan's a fit fella. But he just doesn't look like a big-time college quarterback. I hope he's not listening. But, okay, so there's that. And then there's this other team, Clemson. Here's what I want to do. I want somebody to tell me two or three things to watch for in the game tonight that I can appreciate.
I think I watched more football yesterday than I've watched the entire NFL season.
Me too. Completely agree.
So I think I might not watch tonight.
You're kind of footballed out?
Well,
they say this might be the one for the ages. This is going to be a really historic contest.
And it said yesterday's comeback was a comeback for the ages.
Dan Hampton said this morning that this is really going to be a good game. So
heck, the Bachelor's on.
So here's two or three tips to watching the game after this. Lots of texts about the royal family. Maybe tomorrow we'll ask our royal family watcher to chime in a little bit on this. But right now I asked a sports betting watcher to chime in on the football game tonight. It's Sam Panionovich. Hey, Sam, how are you?
King John, doing well.
What did you think of the NFL games over the weekend, by the way?
I thought that game between the Texans and the Chiefs, if you didn't watch that game or if you fell asleep in the first quarter, second quarter, you probably were surprised by the outcome. I mean, that's what I took away most from the weekend. If you're a Chiefs backer like I am, I had the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl going into the postseason, and I thought, uh-oh, this is it. They're down 21-0 in the first quarter, and then somehow they're up 28-24 at the half, en route to a 51-31 win over the Texans. Patrick Mahomes only 5 touchdown passes yesterday. Is that kid something or what?
Yeah, I think the Bears should look into him. He might be somebody we should get on our team.
I know, and I wonder, and this is something that I thought might have been your news quick question, where did Ryan Pace watch this game? In a closet somewhere? Because, you know, those are two quarterbacks. And this
think
is, you know,
that.
You hate to keep bringing it up, but these are the two quarterbacks that he passed over to take Mitchell Trubisky. I can't imagine he watched that game very pleased.
He was that's such an interesting point. Somebody ought to just, Ella, find out, where did he watch the game? Give him a call. Ask him right now. And what was that like for him personally? Did he cheer on the young man, or was he just miserable every minute of the game? The other game that was fascinating to me was the Ravens and Titans. I was just kind of kidding Dave Ennett about this, but I haven't watched enough NFL to know who Derrick Henry is. He is so much fun to watch, this running back for the Titans.
And he did it not only against the Baltimore Ravens, the number one overall seed in their building, but the fact that he tore up the Patriots and the Ravens in back-to-back weeks. And this is sort of an anomaly here, because when you look at how they're doing it, he had 30 carries yesterday for 195 yards. But when you look around the postseason, every other team has been doing it with pretty much over-the-top quarterback play.
Yeah.
Ryan Tannehill was 7 of 14 for 88 yards, and they win that football game by 16 points. That doesn't happen in modern-day NFL football. The fact that they're doing it with like a 1970s offense is really something fun to watch.
Yeah, he's like a delivery truck. You just put him in gear, and boom, he just slams through stuff. About the Chiefs game, by the way, where the point fluctuation was just so drastic. How did that impact the betting world yesterday? What was the line, or what were the odds? What was the money? Do you have any anecdotes or information along those lines, Sam?
Let me tell you this. The point spread in Vegas on that game closed at Texans plus 9.5 or plus 10. So as long as the Chiefs didn't win by 11 or more, the Texans would have covered that bet. And I'll tell you, if you had the Chiefs, or you had the Texans plus 10 and they're up 21-0, you're already counting your money, because with the point spread, that's 31-0. So if you were in Vegas or Indiana or any of these states that are legal and you had that bet and you took the Texans, you were, like I said, you thought you were probably good in that first quarter. And the fact that the Chiefs rattle off, I think it was, let's see, they were down 24-0.
Right.
And they win 51-31. That is an onslaught of offense. The point total in that game was actually pretty low. I think the point total was about 56, and the Chiefs get 51 by themselves. So the game went over, the Chiefs covered, but the fact that the Texans not only didn't win, but didn't cover a 10-point spread when they were up 24-0, you never see something like that, ever.
Imagine if you were sitting at one of those places where the guys are having their beers and eating their sandwiches and watching the big screens, and they've got the money on the line, and then their team is up, and they're spotted 10 points. And so those guys must have been the happiest guys in the world. They couldn't lose. And then not only did they lose, they got whipped. I would imagine if you'd had a camera on those rooms, you would have gotten some interesting reactions.
We should start putting cameras in every room. Ryan Pace's room, in bar rooms. That'd be something. And I know, you sound genuinely excited, and it takes a lot to get you excited for a sporting event. 51 points in the playoff football game, when you're down by 24, they set a whole bunch of records for things that have never been done. I think they were the first team ever to go down 20-plus points and win by 20 points in a postseason game in the history of the NFL. That's a long time.
Well, see, that's the way I watch NFL and NBA, too. If there's a player or a game or team, rather, that is exceptional, then I can watch that. And there were such standout performances yesterday that it was thoroughly entertaining, even though I didn't know a lick about these teams. And that's the way I'm approaching the game tonight, Sam. I was hopeful that you could just give me a few things to key on to help me enjoy watching the game tonight.
Well, this is just, you know, the coronation that this college football playoff, when they implemented this playoff going back, you know, 5-6 years ago, the fact that we now have the two best teams, and I think we've had the two best teams over the last 4, 5, 6 years in the playoff. I think the first playoff was actually 2014 when Ohio State won the playoff. I think that I have that year right. But the fact that we have, again, what I believe are the two best teams just tells me that this playoff has gotten it right, because for years, going back decades, it was number one against number two, but that was really just the voters deciding it. Now that we actually have a four-team playoff that gets rid of all the bad teams, a la Oklahoma, who got shredded by LSU, and we had Clemson, Ohio State, which really I thought was going to be the de facto championship game, this college football playoff has worked wonders for getting us the best national championship game. And going into this game, you have pretty much the immovable object against the unstoppable force, and that's Joe Burrow and this LSU offense, which has been setting records. He's 3 touchdown passes away from the most single-season touchdowns in a single season, which is incredible. And you have this Clemson team, which hasn't lost in 28 games. Trevor Lawrence, their quarterback, has never lost a college football game. And they're now a 6-point underdog, which I think is a little high. They won the championship last year. All they have done has beaten every single team on their path. But you have this LSU anima, and I talked about this when I was in your studio last Saturday. Going back 2 months ago, the narrative was, well, LSU's good, but they can't beat Alabama. They pound Alabama, and now nobody is saying that they can lose to Clemson. It's just the narrative has swung so much on this LSU team. But this game tonight, you will have probably the best defensive team that this LSU offense has seen. I mean, they just haven't been tested this year with a physical, in-your-face type defense that's going to smack you right in the mouth right away and set the tone. LSU is now, they were a 6-point favorite. Now they're a 5-point favorite. So I think some bigger money has started to come in on the Clemson side. But the point total here is 68. So Vegas is telling you, you're going to have a game in the 30s. It's going to be back and forth. I hope it's one of those games like Clemson-Alabama a couple years ago when Deshaun Watson, ironically enough, led Clemson down the field, fourth quarter, final touchdown, and they won that game in the final minute. I hope that's what we get tonight. That's what I'm rooting for. Yeah. I think Clemson's going to win. I think they're the most talented team in the country on both sides of the ball. But this should be a game that could go down to the final play, to the final minute.
Okay, so a lot of scoring, an even game. The LSU quarterback is standout. It'll be fun to see if he gets 3 touchdowns. I'll key in on all of those things. By the way, personally, I think the Tigers are going to win tonight. Give me another player play moment that you think will be big tonight.
I think Trevor Lawrence at quarterback, and by the way, I just realized what you did there with the Tigers. Wow. you're something. I think that the Clemson quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, is going to outplay LSU quarterback Joe Burrow, who won the Heisman Trophy and then cried like a baby. Not that that matters.
Wait a minute.
I'm kidding.
Wait a minute.
That's how it goes. We trade jokes here.
The crying was lovely. It was a beautiful thing.
I don't want to rattle your cage here. I'm not going to fight you on crying.
It was wonderful.
But there is a prop bet that I really like tonight, okay. And this is the total passing yards for Joe Burrow. It's 360 yards. You can actually bet over or under on Joe Burrow, and I think he's going to hit a little bit of a wall tonight. I don't think he's going to throw for 360 yards. I think he's going to actually be outthrown by Trevor Lawrence. This kid has a chip on his shoulder. I think he will be the better quarterback tonight than the quarterback who just won the Heisman Trophy. So that's what I'm looking for tonight. I also wanted to ask you a quick question. I know you have to go. You're in this big, massive WGN betting pool.
Yes.
I know the entry was, what, $5,000 a person?
$5 a person,
yeah. $5 a person, right. That's the point. $5 or $5,000. Isn't it more fun when you got skin in the game? Aren't you excited for your Niners?
Yes. I learn that lesson every year at the NCAA March Madness tournament as well. And I'm not a gamer. I don't know how to game. But it, if you just have a little action, it does make it more fun, Sam. And that is why I called you, sir. Thank you for your time. I'm out of it.
You got it. Enjoy the game tonight. Have fun.
Sam Panionovich helps me understand those numbers when we talk sports.
Come back to Chicago.
To Chicago.
Chicago.
Drove to Chicago.
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 Shy City. Shy City.
I'm coming home again.
We play that just so I can get to the last sound. It's my favorite part. You need to play the quiz. 312-981-7200. Steve Bertrand will be a lifeline. Is Mary Vandeveld still in the traffic booth, or did she just step out? You're going to be a lifeline? Mary says she's busy. All right. Bertrand is a lifeline for you, and otherwise you're on your own. The category is Lake Michigan, which was so busy this weekend with waves and splashing around that I thought, okay, let's learn a little bit about our great lake. So 312-981-7200, and Joan in Waukegan's ready to roll. Hey, Joan, it's John Williams. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
You know how this works, right, Joan?
I hope so.
Okay, I'm going to ask you some questions. You give me the answer. It's either true, false, or multiple choice. There's a fill in the blank. If you need some help, Steve Bertrand will give you an assist. He's your lifeline. You've automatically won yourself the Mega Pros Mega Hoodie. I know you'll look great in that. And I'll throw in a Lou Malnati's pizza if you get them all right. Sound good?
Thank you.
Okay, question number one. The name of the lake, Lake Michigan, is from the Algonquin Indian term Michigami, meaning A, big lake, or B, stinky onions.
I would say A, big lake.
Big lake is correct. Number two, Lake Michigan is the A, largest of the Great Lakes, or B, second largest, or C, third largest.
B.
B is not correct. It's the second, it's the third largest. The correct answer is C. By the way, would you have gotten that right, Steve Bertrand? Did you know that one?
I knew it wasn't the largest, but I don't know if I would have gone with B or C.
I think it's the second for volume of water, but surface area.
Well, we didn't know what you were asking.
Yeah, you didn't. Name all of the states with Lake Michigan shores. Name all of the states with Michigan shores. All right, Joan, name them.
Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin.
Ding, ding, ding. You're done. You don't have to work anymore.
Thank you.
The flow of Lake Michigan is generally clockwise or counterclockwise. The water in Lake Michigan rotates a direction. Which is it?
Counterclockwise.
You like your chances there, don't you, Joan? Did you know that one, Steve?
I have no idea, no.
Yeah, it's counterclockwise.
I didn't know it rotated.
It kind of comes, you think about it, the wind comes from the west and northwest, pushes the water down. It hits the bottom of the lake there in northwest Indiana, makes that turn and starts to head up. That's a counterclockwise rotation.
But the same wind that's pushing it around on the east side is still hitting the water on the west side.
This is my answer, Steve, counterclockwise.
Okay.
Number five, does the Chicago River flow into or out of Lake Michigan, Joan?
Out of.
Out of is correct. How certain were you of that, Joan?
Remember the stories about them reversing the flow of the river, and I had to stop and think a bit.
I'm that way, too. I go, oh, yeah, that's right. They changed it. So which one is it now? But you guessed correctly. You know it. It now flows out of Lake Michigan. The earliest explorers of Lake Michigan were A, French, B, Spanish, or C, Ditkas. French is correct. We got Joliet, Marquette, LaSalle. Think about all of the street and city names around here that are French influenced. Number seven, the largest city on Lake Michigan is Chicago. The second largest city is
Milwaukee.
That's correct, but that's not the question. The second one is Milwaukee. The third largest city is what?
I'm going to ask for help here.
Oh, fine. Can you give me a state?
Why don't I just give you the...
Okay, I'm going to say... Well, I think at one time it would have been Gary. But I'm going to say Hammond.
You want to go with Hammond? Joan? It's a radio show. We're live. It's kind of tricky, isn't it? Because you certainly know this city.
I have no clue.
It's Green Bay.
Oh, that's not on the lake.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's on the Green Bay
of Lake Michigan.
It's on an inlet.
My answer is final. You're wrong.
That's a good one.
True or false, the water level on Lake Michigan is expected to reach record levels this year. True or false, the Lake Michigan water level is expected to be higher this year than it's ever been.
I would say yes.
That is correct. You have 15 seconds. Name the five great lakes. Ready, set, go.
Michigan, Erie, Ontario. I'm stumped.
Did you say Huron and Superior?
I did not.
Oh, yes, you did.
Oh, good, great.
And one more. It is regarded as the largest lake in the world, but it is listed on most maps as a sea. The largest lake in the world is A, the Red Sea, B, the Black Sea, C, the Caspian Sea.
I'm going to ask for assistance here.
Hey, Steve, what's the largest lake in the world?
I'm going to say Black Sea. I don't know. I'm going to say Dead Sea. No, that's...
Wasn't one of the options, so you
Red
choose...
Red Sea, Dead Sea?
Red Sea, Black Sea, Caspian Sea.
I don't really...
Okay, neither of you knows, and the correct answer is the Caspian Sea. The Caspian Sea. Huh, it's in Russia and other places. Okay, Joan, you've been just delightful and helpful, but not always accurate, but that doesn't really matter on this quiz game. You still get the mega hoodie, and I'm going to send you the pizza anyway. You sound like a nice person.
Great, thank you so much.
Have a good day. Talk to Steve Burt or Elif off the air, and we'll make sure we get you all set up on that. Did you get a chance to watch the lake at all this weekend, Steve? Did you catch the waves?
You know, we were kicking ourselves Saturday night because we were with friends who went over to look at it, and it didn't even occur to us.
Yeah. I made a point to go over and look at the lake just because I wanted to see what all the fuss was about. But I didn't get there until Sunday morning, and I regretted not going Saturday. And, you know, we were out of town over the weekend, but we were in New Buffalo, where a lot of these waves were going, what with the counterclockwise rotation of the water and all. And so... it was up. The surf was pounding New Buffalo. They've got those condominiums along the lakefront there, and then they have a really wide, expansive beach. I would say over 50% of the beach was underwater. It was, and the other funny thing was stuff was washed ashore that just wasn't normally there. Tree trunks and debris. A lot of that is there anyway, but it was just more stuff had come ashore as a result. And as I said at the beginning of the show, when we left then yesterday, we drove back from New Buffalo, came back up to Chicago. So we really just took a tour of the lakefront there. We went over the Skyway and then came across and picked up Lakeshore Drive down by the Science and Industry Museum and came north. And there were places where the bike path, the pedestrian paved path and bike path, was completely buckled. It looked like somebody came in and jackhammered it up, just tore it up, not for vast areas, but for some of it, it was just completely ruined. And I was surprised to see that. I knew that the waves were strong, but I would have almost wanted to have been there and watched that. And then I meant to post this. We will when we put the video up or the quiz up on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. So as I'm typing around, finding out fun facts about the lakes and particularly Lake Michigan, 2 years ago, somebody posted, there was a day when the winds were 40, 50, 60 miles an hour. So the waves were crashing and they have these permanent live cameras in some places where you can just watch the lake. And on a really windy day, the waves are something to see. So somebody is sitting there watching it, and the camera is positioned so you can see the waves crash against one of those break walls that goes out from the shore. And so you're just watching the waves kind of splash over it. You get perspective. It's pretty dramatic. And then, a long, black, slimy sea creature comes up out of the water, is up on the break wall, slithers along, and then dips back into the water. This is a somewhat famous video from just a couple of years ago. And the questions posted sometimes with the headlines are, what do you think this is? It looks like a giant seal. I'm going to guess that the thing was 15 feet long, easily. And I'll bet it weighed 274 pounds. And it's sort of built like a seal, like, you know, where it has a kind of a long, narrow nose and neck, and then kind of a fat belly. But then the tail on the thing goes forever. It looks like some sort of bizarre sea creature. And it's black on the thing. I don't recall now if it was black and white and it was going to be black. I think it was color that I was watching, too. And the thing slithers up onto the seawall and then sort of works its way along and then goes back into the water. And it's still out there. And I'm thinking, what is that thing? And I have never seen an answer. Now you want to know what it is that it looks like. At the end of the show, we'll be done here in 15 minutes. We'll post our quiz and we'll put a link to that video. But maybe you've heard about this thing before and you can tell me. Do you know what I'm talking about? You'll see it after noon. We'll put it at WGN Radio's... Well, we put it on the webpage, Elif, or we'll just put it on my Facebook page. You'll be able to certainly see it on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. But what that creature is, no one to my satisfaction has ever said. Somebody said, well, maybe it's just some seaweed or something that washed ashore. This was not seaweed. We don't have seaweed. And it was alive. And I'm sure somebody knows what I'm talking about.
Coyote?
Scuba coyote. It was a scuba coyote. Don't know what it was, but it was not small, and it was a lie. WGN. I said afternoon, we'll put it on my Facebook page, that video. It's positively alarming and fascinating. My webpage or my on social media, everything is WGN King John, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. But Elif said we'll put it on the WGN Radio page as well. So if you just go to WGNRadio.com, go to WGNRadio.com. On the John Williams page, you'll be able to see the link to that video. And then you tell me what that is. 815, hey, where's the photos or video of that thing? There's your answer, 815. We were talking about good pizza to ship in Chicago. I said ship, and a couple of you have reminded us that when you do send a Lou Malnati's pizza, and Krista McQuarrie from the Tribune posted on Twitter over the weekend, what's the best pizza to send to somebody from Chicago? And a lot of folks said Malnati's. But the key is when you get that pizza out to make sure you wipe the ice and moisture out of the tin. And then some of you put just a little oil in there and it keeps the crust from getting soggy, especially on the spinach or vegetable pizzas. If you don't, you'll have a soggy bottom, and you don't want that.
We do the Lou2Go, right? Advertise all the time.
Sure.
I send that to business associates every year.
Yeah, I think it's a great gift. I have sent it to, like, I keep mentioning our going to New Buffalo, but I told Brenda, I said, I'll send you a pizza while you're over there. I've sent it to family members. I don't always tell them the trick of making sure you wipe the ice and moisture from the tin before you put it in the oven. We were talking sports a little while ago with Sam Panionovic about the NFL games this weekend and the big college football game tonight, the championship where the Tigers take on the Tigers. I think Paul Sullivan had a really good piece in the Tribune today who writes about baseball. He said, you want a resolution? Try these 12, a dozen things the Cubs should consider for the 2020 season. And some of these, I think, are insightful as Paul Sullivan can be. Number one on his list, stop saying we don't have any money. No one believes Chairman Tom Ricketts when he says the Cubs don't have any money. It's a ludicrous claim. They can pay all the money they want. You pay a luxury tax if you pay over a certain amount of money on your payroll, then the other teams in baseball get it, so it becomes very expensive. But they have a lot of money. They can do whatever they want. It's a ludicrous claim, says Paul Sullivan. Never thought about it that way. Number two, end the elaborate bullpen dances after home runs. It was fun while it lasted, Sullivan writes, and it served its purpose, but this tradition needs to die a quick death. The Cubs' bullpen had a combined 28 blown saves in 2019. They were the fourth worst bullpen in Major League Baseball, so stop your dancing, guys. I loved that, but I think he's spot on about that, too. Number four, explain the payroll issue to fans. He talked about Chris Bryant and some of their stars. If the Cubs don't feel that they can sign them to long-term deals to remain within their budget, be transparent and say so. Number five, fix the Wrigley Field sound system. When you cannot hear the person right next to you, it's time to turn down the volume, at least during the game. Pre-game music is fine, but no one came to listen to the DJ. Again, I just think that's so true. I went to a couple Cubs games last year, and I thought they were trying so hard to sell the entertainment value because maybe the team on the field was frustrating that they could have literally and figuratively turned the volume down a little for me. Number six, bring back batting practices for home games and let the fans get in early enough to watch. Number eight on his list, stop inviting seventh-inning stretch singers to talk about themselves during the games. Now, I don't mind them. I think usually those are interesting people in the booth. And I don't think there's a better TV broadcast team than Len Casper and Jim Deshays. So when they're talking to guys, I think Casper is just so dang good. Anything he does, it's never seemed forced to me. I know they usually plug in a movie or a book or a TV show or something, but I find those especially. Hey, look, the games go about 4 hours. If somebody wants to sit in for half an inning, I don't have a problem
right,
with that.
Right, if the bullpen hasn't danced in a few innings.
Poor Ron Santo. I mean, nobody was more entertaining on the radio than Ron Santo. All those years watching Cubs teams that weren't that good. And so Pat and Ron would talk about tomato soup and sweaters and toupees. And it was always great theater and drama and comedy. It was just always fun. But because that was all they had. The line we said here on the radio when the Cubs were at this station is that there's this thing called the Pat and Ron Show, and the Cubs have agreed to play games while they're on the air. And they may get to it, but they don't have to. It would be a different experience now, right? Maybe you do want a little more hardcore analysis because the team is competitive and sometimes compelling. Number 12, last one on his list of a dozen things the Cubs should do. Raise a Joe Maddon flag on the Wrigley Field roof. Joe Maddon's contribution to the only Cubs championship since 1908 needs to be acknowledged, even if they unceremoniously let him go at the end of last season. A flag is the least they can do. I don't know that Maddon was treated badly in his dismissal. Sometimes the manager has to go, even though he's not the reason that the team lost. So I don't think it was a big shock that he was gone. But a flag would be nice. I don't think he gets a statue, but a flag would be nice. And about the other two, I think that I'll just double down on the volume in between innings. I don't know, though, Steve, are you with me on end the bullpen dancing?
That it's time to go?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, especially since they haven't been a playoff team, you know?
To me, it's akin to when somebody scores a touchdown and they do a celebration and the team's down 18 points or something.
Yeah,
like
I really think all of that stuff needs to go. There was a guy made a tackle and then he like belly crawled 10 yards yesterday.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Just stand up and tackle another guy.
Yeah, well, it is that act like you've been there before and not, oh my God, can you believe I tackled somebody? Mom, look. But those guys are really good. Where it really gets my goat is when the team isn't doing well,
right,
or the team is losing by a lot. I'm like, hey, dude, I'm happy for you, but do you mind? We're all kind of got long faces over here.
Or when they're 23 games under 500 and they yes, all charge the plate at a walk-off home run. like it just cinched them the playoff spot.
Yeah, really. If you celebrate a lot your home run and your team's still down 7, then you shouldn't be doing that.
But you know what I'm saying? At the end of the game, like 10th inning, someone hits a home run to win the game, and then everyone runs to the home plate, and they're cheering, and it's like...
Well, I'm a Sox fan. They finished below 500. One of my favorite things was when the Sox would hit a home run, and if it was a game winner, our second baseman would come out with the Gatorade cooler and dump it on his own head.
I just, oh, that's true. I remember that.
I just love that. I'm going to miss him this year. It was a lot of fun. It's time to head down the hall. G, what's going on with you?
Lots happening on this Monday. In fact, we're going to be revealing which states have the highest and lowest credit card balances. something that's really important right
Ours
now.
Ours has to be the highest.
I can't tell you. You got to listen.